It's no great leap to seeing any version of time itself as artificial. To make this easier to comprehend, we need to explore a basic term in quantum physics that also applies to everyday reality. State. When you see a tree, its state is that of a tangible object you can locate in space-time and experience with your five senses. A floating cloud is vaporous and more elusive than a tree, but it exists in the same state of physicality. When physics delves into the quantum domain, another state is involved, the virtual state. It is invisible and intangible, but nevertheless real. In fact, we visit the virtual state every waking moment. Think of a word, any word. We'll pick avocado. When you think or say avocado, it exists as a mental object. Before you think or say the word, where is it? Words aren't stored in a physical state in brain cells. Instead, they exist invisibly, but ready at hand, in a virtual state. You can pluck them out at will, an ability that deteriorates when the brain's memory retrieval gets physically weakened or damaged. A faulty radio can't retrieve radio waves either. Without a working receiver, radio signals exist, invisible and unsensed, all around us. Likewise, the brain is a receiving device for the words we use. And not only that, the rules for using language are also in the virtual domain. When you see the sentence, "Our house need wind," you instantly know that it doesn't obey the rules of language. You use no energy inside your brain to tell the difference between sense and nonsense. The rules are invisibly embedded in a place that is, for all intents and purposes, non-physical. Subatomic particles also come from a place that is non-physical. And there's no reason to believe that where you go to fetch the word rose isn't the same place from which galaxies spring. The virtual state lies outside the manifest creation. When a wave turns into a particle, which is the basic step that brings photons, electrons, and other particles into the world of our experience, the virtual state is left behind. The virtual state is also why physics computes that every cubic centimeter of empty space isn't actually empty. At the quantum level, it contains a huge amount of virtual energy. All things in the universe can change states. In everyday experience, no one is mystified to see water turn into ice or steam, which are other states of H2O. At the quantum level, changes of state reach their limits, poised between existence and non-existence. A kitchen table is transiting from the virtual to the manifest state, thousands of times a second, too fast for anyone to observe. This is the winking in and out, or on-off switch, that we've mentioned several times. A quantum change of state is the basic act of creation. The multiverse gained enormous popularity for this very reason, when it was realized that a universe popping into existence was no more eventful than an electron popping into existence. The same fluctuations in the quantum field were at work. To the naked eye, the universe looks very, very big, while an electron is very, very small. But this difference doesn't matter in the act of creation. A quantum popping into existence doesn't come from somewhere else, nor does it go anywhere. It is only a change in state. Therefore, instead of using time as the measure of change, we must think in terms of states. Think of a volleyball tethered to a pole. When you hit it, the ball starts revolving around the pole. But at a certain point, it runs out of energy and comes closer and closer to the pole, finally reaching a state of rest. Planets orbiting the sun would fall into it if they lost energy and momentum over time, except for the fact that they travel in the vacuum of outer space. Unlike a volleyball, they meet no air resistance and thus can keep spinning round for eons. Now imagine an electron orbiting around the nucleus of an atom, an image that appears very similar to a volleyball circling a pole. With atoms, each electron orbit is called a shell, and electrons stay inside their assigned shell unless a quantum event occurs, in which case they jump a shell closer or a shell farther out. The word quantum was assigned because, as a packet of energy, the quantum travels from one definite state to another, carrying its energy with it. Electrons don't slide from one location to another, nor do they slow down. They pop out of one orbit, shell, and appear in another. When you grasp the importance of state, you see why quanta aren't on clock time. Clock time is like ticker tape spooling out of the tape machine continuously, while the quantum domain is full of gaps, sudden changes of state, simultaneous events, reversals of cause and effect. So, if the basis of creation is quantum, how did physical objects get tied to clock time in the first place? The simplest answer is to say that clock time is merely another state. Once the universe matured, around a billion years after the Big Bang, every gross physical object, that is, bigger than an atom, was locked into the same state of manifestation. Advanced mathematics, using probability theory, can compute the very, very remote chance that a kitchen table might totally disappear into the virtual domain, only to reappear 3 feet away. But that's not a practical consideration. Being locked into manifestation, gross objects in the everyday world are reliable in their subjugation to space-time. Despite the quantum's vanishing act as it winks in and out of existence, kitchen tables aren't going anywhere soon on their own. So the real question is, how do changes of state occur? The Big Bang, which caused the entire universe to emerge instantaneously, was a change of state that can't be explained as happening in one place or at one specific time. During the Planck era, everywhere and nowhere were the same, as were before and after. Despite the wall that prevents us from witnessing the Planck era, we could call it a phase transition, whereby one state transformed into another, and the virtual became manifest. It's quite peculiar, sitting here where the clocks tick, to realize that, just like an electron popping into a new shell, the entire creation did the same almost 14 billion years ago. But if we can imagine it, at least this tells us how something as tiny as an electron and something as large as the cosmos are linked. Neither one is on clock time. Therefore, entirely new ways of thinking must be adopted. Psychology makes an entrance. Now we're ready to take you, personally, out of the prison of time. Your body participates in the universe through changes of state. Let's say a stranger knocks on your door one day. You open it, and he introduces himself. If he says, "I'm your long-lost brother, and I've spent years trying to find you," you will go into a different state than if you hear him say, "I'm from the IRS, and we are confiscating your house." Your body will react instantly and dramatically in both cases. Simply by hearing a few words, your heart rate, respiration, blood pressure, and the brain's chemical balance turn on a dime. In human life, a change of state is holistic. Like an electron, you can jump to a new level of excitation. A stranger introducing himself might turn your life upside down. Even as you undergo a dramatic change of state, however, you can't observe the microscopic physical processes taking place in your cells. The particular areas of the brain that create joy or anxiety will light up on a brain scan, but subjectively, we experience only the final outcome, not the mechanics of getting there. But one thing stands out. The triggering event, a stranger knocking on your door, is what begins the change of state. It's not the case that the quantum, although often called the basic building block of nature, is actually building the experience. The chain of command, as it were, moves from top to bottom. First comes the stranger at the door, then the words he speaks, your mental reaction, and all the physical stuff. In short, mind comes before matter. Only in the human world are we certain that this is true, despite the grumbling of materialists, who believe that every event, including mental ones, are caused by bits of matter exchanging bits of energy. Words are mental events first and foremost, because their purpose is the exchange of meaning, not the exchange of physical energy. If someone utters the phrase, "I love you," the physical stuff of the body reacts one way. If instead one hears, "I want a divorce," the physical stuff reacts another way. This fact wasn't lost on some quantum physicists, including John von Neumann, a brilliant theorist who took the bold step of declaring that the quantum domain, and reality itself, has a psychological component. Nature is dual, both subjective and objective. That's why we humans can see any situation from either perspective. Meeting a stranger at the door, you can measure his height, weight, hair color, and so on. Objective. Or listen to what he has to say. Subjective. Eyewitness reports of crime are notoriously unreliable in court because all of us mix up our viewpoints. Someone who threatens us grows larger in our minds, making it hard to give an objective account of how tall he is. Von Neumann took the dual nature of reality quite far, to the very essence of how nature operates. He described a reality where quantum particles make choices and where the observer changes the thing he observes. Quantum physics has been swamped with subjective effects for over a century, largely thanks to the uncertainty principle, which holds that the properties of a quantum can't all be known. The observer selects a property, and suddenly that's what the quantum displays. At the same time, its other properties slip away and are even changed simply by being observed. Though this sounds abstract, here's an everyday example. You are standing on the north shore of Oahu in Hawaii, a place famous for its massive waves and a mecca for high-risk surfing. As a wave rolls in, you take a snapshot to show your friends. The snapshot stops the motion of the wave, which means you can see how big it is, but not how fast it was moving. You've selected one property only. When a physicist observes a subatomic particle, he's taking a sort of snapshot that reveals something he wants to measure, while excluding the other properties. It's not satisfactory to look at reality this way, however, since reality is all-embracing. To compensate for the properties that vanish into thin air when a single property is observed, the other properties of a subatomic particle are calculated as probabilities. In our everyday example, as you are showing around your snapshot of a huge wave in Oahu, someone might ask, "How fast was it moving?" You vaguely reply, "Real fast." If asked to pin down your answer, you know that the wave was moving faster than a snail, but slower than a jet plane. Its actual speed is probably between 20 and 60 miles per hour. Since the wave has long since disappeared, all you can work with is this probability. Quantum physics finds itself in much the same position, leaving open a basic question. How much does an observer change the real facts? Von Neumann didn't conjecture on this point. His breakthrough was that reality has a psychological component, the mind-like behavior of subatomic particles, that is essential. Some physicists, such as Schrödinger, have held that the psychological component is paramount. Schrödinger declared as an absolute essential that we surrender the notion of the real external world, alien as it seems to everyday thinking. But materialism, which traces all phenomena to the existence of the external world, hasn't budged. Either the psychological component is denied altogether, or it is extracted from the equation. How does the psychological side of reality affect time? It's well known that traumatic experiences cause time to slow down. Subjects report that in the midst of battle or during a car crash, everything moved in slow motion. In sports, the concept of being in the zone is an altered state where the player can do no wrong, where everything meshes perfectly. And in addition, the world grows silent and time slows down. Athletes report being in a kind of dream state, divorced from everyday reality. It's hard to see how these reports can be sorted out to remove the subjective component. However, experiments have been successfully done in a more controlled environment. In one study, subjects took an amusement park ride that dropped them from a high tower. They experienced free fall before a parachute opened and gently lowered them to the ground. When asked how long they were in free fall, subjects always exaggerated the time, the same way people do in any traumatic situation. The actual time they were falling can be measured, and it becomes a simple matter to extract the subjective element of distortion. Is this good enough? If von Neumann was right, the psychological component isn't separate from how we experience the world at every moment. Maybe the real reality is waiting out there for someone who can do a better job finding it. Materialists, who prefer to be called physicalists, since their worldview includes energy as well as matter, insist that no psychological component is needed. But the history of quantum physics points the other way. Schrödinger has been dismissed as a mystic, but he knew, based on empirical evidence, that at the basic level, a subatomic particle doesn't behave like a tiny planet, but like a smear of possibilities. The observer determines which possibility will undergo a change of state, manifesting as an object that can be measured. So the best answer to the mystery of where did time come from turns out to be a human answer. We didn't have to be present at the Big Bang for it to have a psychological component. The only version of the Big Bang anyone will ever know is the story told by human beings using our mind and brain. The same mechanism is producing reality at this very moment. Therefore, the mystery of time exists before our eyes. Without a human answer, it will remain a riddle forever. In this chapter, we've given you a preview of the benefits of a human universe where time is on your side because you participate in creating it. At the moment, however, physics is still struggling to keep objective time intact, preserving it as the only real time that science has